You're listening to MLB.com Extras, brought to you by MLB.tv. It's baseball everywhere.
Well, as we enter the penultimate week, we welcome you in. MLB.com Extras, the National League Central edition, where we still have the Cardinals, the Cubs, and the Pirates bunched tightly atop the best division in baseball. Reds continue to try and play spoiler, and the Milwaukee Brewers got their brand new general manager. That and a whole lot more on this week's edition, MLB.com Extras, National League Central. Jen, gloves were off last weekend in Chicago against the Cubs. And you know, I think a point maybe you made in one of your pieces was this rivalry, this storied great rivalry, Cards and Cubs. I mean, really, it may be back again. These two teams locking horns in a very dramatic and sort of draining way this last weekend.
Yeah, a very emotionally charged series this weekend. I mean, obviously this Cardinals-Cubs rivalry, the historic nature of it, hasn't gone anywhere in the last few years. But you look at just where the Cubs have been in the standings, and you look at the Cardinals games against the Pirates in recent years, those have been bigger rivalries, the Brewers, the Reds even. But to have the Cubs back playing well, you know, they're still trying to seek a division title. I'm not sure now it's 6 games back, but that's the reality. But man, we got a good taste of an October feeling this weekend at Wrigley Field. You know, the Cubs, having been battered around by the Cardinals for so many years, came up to play. And, you know, I think it was a wake-up call to the Cardinals as well, who have not played well against the Cubs either in this series or a series earlier this month. But this team is here to stay. They're only getting better. They're believing that they can finally beat the Cardinals. Then you throw in all the hit-by-pitches and Joe Maddon's monologue and all of the above, and it made for a fun weekend and perhaps a preview of a fun series we might see in a few weeks in October.
Oh, man, I'll tell you. You know, Matheny didn't take the bait. He took the higher ground on this one, and you know, people can argue until they're blue in the face what, you know, how people should handle these things. But he tried to dodge it as much as possible. What about in the clubhouse? What were guys saying? Because Joe Maddon was out there with it, and he wasn't hiding behind anything. His words were strong. How was that received in the Cardinals clubhouse?
Yeah, the Cardinals as a whole said very little, but I think it's what was unsaid and kind of felt that spoke volumes. I mean, you sit there on Friday, and Joe Maddon calls the Cardinals, among other things, a vigilante group. Then the next day, the Cubs go out and hit 3 Cardinals batters, and that did not sit well. I mean, going into that clubhouse postgame, especially the way it ended with the Cardinals mounting a comeback that fell just short, very icy feel to the clubhouse. Multiple players saying no comment when asked about the hit-by-pitches and kind of the feeling of the series. But again, you could tell in the tone of their responses, in the glare, kind of just in the mood of that clubhouse, that it did not sit well. So, you know, for the Cardinals, and this is really what Mike Matheny has preached, the best retaliation was to go out and win. And I think what we saw on Sunday was a Cardinals team that played with more energy. They played with an edge. The way they came out, scored 3 runs in the first inning, some hard slides into second to break up potential double plays. Carlos Martinez, another emotional start from him. You know, I think you saw that was the way the Cardinals were going to respond. They weren't going to respond in words, but they wanted to respond in action.
It's funny you say that about Carlos Martinez. It seems like everything is really emotional with him, right? I mean, it's like, I don't know how guys can, you know, can last this summer when they, you know, when they put themselves out on the edge like that. It seems like every time, because he plays with that certain, I guess to use the same word again, that certain edge.
Yeah, I mean, Carlos has always been like that. I think the one thing we've seen this year from him is he's really matured and found a way to use that edge and that energy and that excitability that he has to his benefit. What we saw last year, you know, when he first came up, was that would sometimes allow him to unravel when things didn't go right. We saw on Sunday a couple of pitches that he thought should have been called strike 3s go against him. He acted very demonstrably at the time. For the first time in my life, I actually saw a pitcher go up, put his arm around a home plate umpire and apologize, which is what Carlos Martinez did after one point, because he began to realize that perhaps he could be coming across as showing up the umpire. But that's just Carlos. I mean, this is a kid who loves to play the game. You know, somebody who has come from really a hard place to the success that he has had. And, you know, Mike Matheny always calls him a very tough, tough kid. And, you know, and right now, again, I think as we're seeing, he feeds off that energy. So, you know, having him on the mound, his last 2 starts have been tremendous, which is certainly a good sign for the Cardinals, who had seen a little bit of a dip in effectiveness from him over the previous 6 weeks. But he came out wanting to make a statement yesterday, and he used that energy to his benefit.
Tom, it looked like, you know, a big blow might have been delivered with that three-game sweep, rather the last three games won by the Chicago Cubs in that series in Pittsburgh. But they went out on this tough road trip and really showed some life over the weekend against the Dodgers, and that, I'm sure, has retrained their focus again.
Totally, totally. You know, those three straight losses, then you go into L.A., and as you might have expected, you lose to Zach Greinke, and you got Clayton Kershaw coming up after that. So it looked kind of really negative, like this team was about to cash in as far as, any chances at the division. But they beat Greinke. They win the Sunday game in L.A., go on to Colorado, and the division hopes are still very much alive.
Yeah, Cardinals, have shown some vulnerability. The Cubs are coming on hard, though. How much? It's funny when you're in the middle where the Pirates are. You know, you got to have that head on the swivel, I guess.
yeah.
Who's the bigger nemesis right now, the Cubs or the Cardinals?
Well, present purposes, it's the Cubs because holding them off obviously is job number one. And the Pirates get to play the Cubs before they get to play the Cardinals. So, best case scenario, they win three out of four in Colorado, put their foot down in Chicago, take care of the Cubs, and by the time the Cardinals come up after that in PNC Park, your concern is only St. Louis. You've already taken care of the Cubs, and you can focus on the Cardinals. That's the best case scenario. We'll see if it plays out. But as far as who's the harder team right now, without question, it's the Cubs. Not just because of the one loss record, but that team. Joe Madden is doing what everybody expected him to do. He's got that team believing in itself and playing at a very high level. And you know what? That little issue they had with the Cardinals over the weekend, with the bean balls. That's Joe Madden's style. I remember so distinctly when the Rays were a definite, all-star. And I mean, they had never had even a winning season. I very much remember they kind of threw down the gauntlet to the Yankees in a spring training game. They had a brawl. And sure enough, that's the season that the Rays, won the AL East. So, I mean, Joe Madden plays the psychological game as well as his players, as he gets his players to play the physical game. Right now, that's a very threatening combination.
I agree. He's a master at that and a good manager who knows how to, I don't know if it's manipulate is the right word, but certainly motivate, keep guys focused, those types of things can be very valuable. I do believe to that end, Clint Hurdle is an absolute master of handling his clubhouse. You had a talk with him the other day about this idea of having that wild card game at home, should they not win the division, versus playing that game on the road. I mean, the home road thing, there's an obvious advantage, the last bat, those types of things. But what else did you glean from him in that conversation?
Well, I mean, obviously, the other obvious thing is the support of the fans, especially in Pittsburgh when you got those postseason blackouts. That's a very genuine 10th man situation, I believe. But also, as Clint pointed out, as most teams, the Pirates are formulated to perform best in their own ballpark, with the big left field the corner. Your pitchers are ground ball pitchers. Obviously, a home field advantage in a very realistic sense translates to how your team was built. It was built for your home ballpark, so it definitely would have a tactical advantage in their playing in a home ballpark.
Yeah. I guess kind of an off-the-field story now, unfortunately. Jung-Ho Gung, knocked up. I mean, he really got banged up at second base. The fractured tibia, he's got the torn meniscus. He's out. What was the reaction in the clubhouse? How does Clint Hurdle talk about or think about navigating the season going forward without him?
Well, in typical Hurdle fashion, it's the so what, now what? We have to move beyond Jung-ho's injury. He conceded what a valuable player he had become and somebody that he'll be missed. But, we also have to look at the other end of that. Fans will recall both Gong and Ramirez, for that matter, became principal players during the injuries to Jordy Mercer and Josh Harrison. And when those two were coming back, one of the leading issues was how is Hurdle going to find playing time for all these guys and keep them sharp. So in a realistic sense, now you're taking Jung Ho out of that equation, but it doesn't really overall negatively affect the lineup and who he's got available, but he's got one less infielder to have to get into the mix. As much as Jung Ho will be missed, and because, you know, besides his production, has become a very integral part of that whole clubhouse atmosphere. He'll be missed, but whatever happens from here on out cannot be blamed, you know, if things go negatively, not to look on the dark side. But whatever happens here on out will be irregardless of the availability or lack of, for, you know, Jung Ho Kang.
Terry, the Cubs and the Cardinals in a rivalry that felt so real this last weekend, the intensity kind of just spilled over. It was a darn near mess, I even imagine, for a writer, although you probably love having so much stuff to write about.
No, there's no issues for us. We always like entertaining games. What was really magical was about the, I don't know if it's the eighth inning, and the Cubs had not, on Sunday, and the Cubs were kind of mounting a little bit of a rally, and no one was sitting down at Wrigley Field. I mean, everybody was on their feet and cheering, and you got 40,000 plus, and it was a real goosebump moment. I mean, Cubs did not tie the game, did not go ahead, and they lost Sunday, but still, just to feel just the surge of emotion and the energy from the crowd was really something. So, very energizing.
Yeah, and you know there are few places that can do it quite like Wrigley. Especially, you know, when the team's playing the way it has been. But let me ask you about Joe Maddon and the comments. You know, the Soprano, the vigilantes, don't start stuff, we finish it. I mean, there's so much in that borderline tirade of his.
But the cool thing was that he was so calm when he delivered it. I mean, if he was mad, and I was one of his kids, I would love to have him as a dad, because he didn't raise his voice, he didn't scream, he was never out of control. He knew exactly what message he wanted to get across, and he delivered it perfectly, and it was really kind of fun. We never did see Tony Soprano, I have to admit.
You did a little double checking on that one, no Soprano.
Yes,
we
were double checking. I sent my intern down there, but no, he didn't find him. So.
I agree with you. He stayed in control the whole time. There was certainly a firmness in his voice, and there was an expression on the face that said, you know, I'm not goofing here. How was it received, you know, in the Cubs clubhouse?
Well, in the Cubs clubhouse, it was received well. I mean, I don't think expected anything less. You know, several players, you know, Rizzo said that, you know, Joe's had his back all season, and he wasn't surprised by it. I mean, when you think about it, Rizzo's been hit by a pitch 29 times, and I, having watched all 29 of them, you know, the Cubs do not go back and retaliate immediately after that. So it's not as if the Rizzo hit, getting hit by the pitch on Friday, was really, it was really unnecessary by the Cardinals, and was not a good show. What was strange was that while Joe's going off on this long monologue, I asked the Cardinal writers afterwards, and they said Matheny just brushed it off. It was not a big deal to them. So they obviously didn't know what Joe had said. And I think the next day, when asked about it on follow-ups, you know, Matheny's they'll stick to their business. So it's always entertaining. You almost wish that they could meet again in the postseason, that this wasn't their last meeting for the year. But, you know, Joe grew up a Cardinals fan. He tells the story about how when he went to his father took him to a Yankees game, and his dad said, you can pick out any cap you want. And he picked out the Cardinals cap because he liked the logo. And he grew up really admiring the Cardinals, sort of, you know, the allegiance developed there. So I think he almost took this a little personally, because this is an organization that he really respected, and he just wasn't happy with it.
News is out. David Stearns is the new general manager, he formerly of the Houston Astros organization. What can you tell us? What's the reaction been?
Well, look, he fits the bill of what we've talked about over the last couple of weeks that they may be looking for. He's young. He is really young, 30 years old. He'll be the youngest GM currently in Major League Baseball. He is analytics-driven. He is Ivy League, a Harvard graduate. He checks all of those major boxes that we thought Mark Hastanasio, the Brewers owner, was going to be interested in. And look, he's 30, and a lot of people are focusing on that age, but what Mark Hastanasio just said in a long press conference at Miller Park is what they focused on was his experience, which is quite extensive. Front office positions with a number of different teams, including prominent ones with the Indians and more recently the Astros as Jeff Luhnow's right-hand man. Also in Major League Baseball, working in arbitration and as part of the negotiating team on the last CBA. He's worked in baseball ops for the Arizona Fall League. This guy has done a lot for a 30-year-old. And, you know, the age, as he said, he's been young in pretty much every position he's been in baseball, and it's never been a hindrance before. He doesn't think it'll be a hindrance in this position.
Age is such an arbitrary, silly number, right? I mean, it's...
Well, thank you. I like to think of it that way, as I as mine starts to tick up.
Well, you know, it really is in both ends. You made some, you know, you've had a great week for this, by the way. I just have to tip my cap. You finding all the historical tie-ins to the times records have been made previously, or age. You know, your fact. You start your lead is that he wasn't even alive, wasn't born. The last time the Brewers went to the World Series in 1982. That's sort of mind-boggling, and yet, what you know, it doesn't matter, right? It can't possibly matter.
Well, look, it's you interview and you talk to a guy and you listen to what he has to say, and David Stearns was very impressive in his interview. Mark Hastanasio said this began with 44 names on a list with the executive search firm that the Brewers retained. It was whittled down, and part of the process, it was pretty interesting to hear Mark talk about this. They had a list of 11 attributes, and they made Mark literally rank them from number one to number 11. And number one was, you know, having the vision to develop a consistent postseason team. That was the most important thing to Mark Hastanasio in this process. And David Stern's experience with these teams he's worked for, combined with, you know, what he said in that interview, made Mark believe that this was the best person for this job. And you're right, age is a number. They've got a young manager in Craig Counsell who's 44, and the idea is to have some continuity. That is very important to this particular owner who, remember, when he bought the team in 2005, he kept Doug Melvin, the GM. He kept the then scouting director, Jack Zarensic, who'd been such a big part of bringing the Brewers to prominence, Gord Ashe, the assistant GM. All the primary baseball guys stayed, because there's a big belief by Mark Hastanasio that there's strength and continuity. So I think the goal here is to put these two men together, David Stearns and Craig Counsell. They've already had a long conversation. They will have more in the coming days. And yeah, they put them together and let them build something.
Interesting. A vision to develop a consistent postseason, I don't know, plan or whatever. It's kind of hard. I mean, you know, anybody can come up with a plan or a vision to know whether or not it's going to be good. You know, will only play out over time. So that seems like a tougher one to evaluate. I wonder if there was another trait of his, another accomplishment perhaps that helped push him over the top. Was it, you know, was it experience with a certain general manager or success with a team or something like that?
I don't think so. The sense we just got, and you know, we spent an hour asking questions of both men. It was cumulative, you know. It's and with everything, it's a mix. Everyone is going to want to tag this guy as a young numbers nerd, right? Because that's what it is easy to look at his resume and, you know, even look at the guy and make that determination. But there's more to it than that. And to be a successful organization, you need to check all these different boxes. You need to scout well. You need to develop players well. You need to treat people well. You know, all these different skills are going to come into play. You need to manage people well. And I think that David Stearns impressed, again, this owner and three others who did these long interviews. It was about 3 hours in a group of four and then an hour one-on-one with the owner and each candidate. A handful of candidates got this far. I think he impressed, you know, with a wider range of skills than just being, you know, an Ivy League guy who knows analytics. There's more to it to be a good general manager, and they feel like David Stearns is going to bring those things to the table.
Mark, as we get going here down to the last couple of weeks of the season, it's one of those things I keep looking up, and now the Reds in the middle of another kind of important game in this division where three teams are battling out at the top, and it seems like the Reds are always playing somebody vying for one of those, you know, one of those playoff positions.
Absolutely, and yeah, they just finished with the Brewers, and that's the only team that was left on their schedule other than a one-game makeup with the Nationals, that teams that really are that was the last of the teams that really aren't in it. So now it's contenders pretty much going forward, and their chance to put a stamp on things. The one thing they can kind of hang their hat on is that they haven't gone away, you know, away quietly in September. August was a dreadful month, and they've already won more games, I think, this month than they did all of last month. So right now they're doing it what they need to do to do what they can to influence the race.
Well, they're doing it with all these young arms. We've talked a lot over the last month or so about this rotation, all rookie rotation. But we're seeing guys, you know, hitting pitch limits now this time of year. We're seeing some guys pull up a little lame, guys like Iglesias, who's struggling with his shoulder. And Finnegan makes his first start the other day. What was the consensus or the thoughts on Finnegan's start?
Well, they wanted to give him a chance to get used to the team, and they thought he could maybe work out of the bullpen initially. But then when Lorenzen hit his innings limit, and then Sampson ran into a personal issue, and he had to leave, and then Iglesias has shoulder fatigue, and they're kind of weighing their options with him. Finnegan became a very available candidate to take on a start, and he apparently pitched pretty well. The end game for him, of course, is that they really want him to be a factor in the rotation in 2016. They think he can compete for a role, and if for whatever reason, if he couldn't do it, he's obviously flexible enough that he can go into the bullpen where he's pitched with some success with Kansas City. So, it's an opportunity, like for a lot of these guys, it's to show and make an impression and get yourself in position for next season.
Hey, correct me if I'm wrong, but that was one of his beefs with Kansas City, right? Was he wanted to start, and they saw him better as a reliever?
Well, it was one of those things. It sounded like is that they didn't have a defined role for him that he could get comfortable with. He did want to start, and he was used out of the bullpen. I don't think he necessarily had a problem with coming out of the bullpen, especially last year, is that he didn't have a routine, and he didn't know when to get ready for what, because sometimes he would be ready to start, and then they'd use him up out of the bullpen. And he just wanted to develop, if he was going to be a starter long-term, the starter habits and the starter in between start routine. And that was something he was never able to do. And it's something he's been learning to do at the end of his time in Kansas City when he was with Omaha, and then while he was with Louisville. He didn't win a game as a starter in the minors, so it was a struggle for him to get comfortable, but it sounds like he might be on his way.
So that's good. You know, that's good news. Obviously, a very talented guy. I'm going to camp. Get him out there now. You know, if there's any thought that he's going to be a part or compete for a spot in the rotation next year, you know, why wait? So I'm glad that he's getting that shot. On the everyday player front, Todd Frazier, and you pointed it out. You know, He's made history, and history in an organization that has more of it than any in the game. But joining Frank Robinson with a storied performance this year for Todd Frazier, really hard to put that in perspective, how incredible an effort it has been.
Yeah, not too many third basemen in the Reds' history have done what he's done. Tony Perez is really the one name that comes to mind, and Darren Johnson, I believe. And he's just kind of found his way back. It took a while. He didn't come out of the All-Star break and his exceptional home run derby experience on the other end of that too well, but he certainly has found his way again. He's still prone to taking a hack every now and again away from his hot zone, but he's a guy that has the strength that he can go after a bad pitch and find a way to get it out. He's just that strong. He can push one out. So it's definitely, he's a guy that never lacks in confidence, but at the same time, I think he could use a little, and he's been getting it the last couple of weeks.
That's all we could fit in this week. Thanks so much for joining us. MLB.com Extras, National League Central Edition.